Hello and welcome back to episode 100 of the IBS Freedom Podcast. OMG, we made it! Now we're both hoping that Cece decides to come out right now, because right. That would be the ultimate season one finale for you good folks, and they deserve that. Don't they?
Right.
Don't they, Cece?
I'm bouncing on this birth ball, so you don't know how gravity is going to work.
She might just slip right out. That's the hope.
Exactly. She's being pulled down by gravity right now. We're just bouncing, little light bounces.
Yep. Well,
but I think she's going to hold out.
Maybe by the end of this.
Yeah, we could. Yeah. We could. Wouldn't that be insane?
That would be bonkers, and it would be right. so perfect. I'm really rooting for this, Cece. Don't ruin my day, man.
Right, we'll just have to check back in like an hour or so and see.
By the end of the episode, we'll see if we'll see if we can't make a baby happen on this episode, guys. No pressure for Amy at all.
Right.
Maybe
right.
like give a good squeeze every now and then, like
right, like yeah, opening cool. up.
Valsalva.
Opening up the pelvic floor, trying to coax it out,
like,
with different techniques. But yeah, I am on a birth ball. It feels good to sit on a ball. So.
Well, we'll see. Regardless of whether or not we have a baby by the end of this. You like how I'm saying we now? Like, I'm part of this.
Right. Right.
When we have a baby. But regardless of whether or not Cece decides to come out now or in a little bit, I'm just excited we made it here because we've been speculating. I mean, honestly, since you got pregnant, we were kind of mapping out, okay, how many episodes, like, can we get a little bit ahead so that we still have podcast episodes for our peeps, but we still have time for you to rest and recover
right.
realistically. So everybody's going to be listening to this in, I think, August. And so I'm coming to you from the past.
Right.
But if you're listening now in August, heads up, we will be on a hiatus for a bit because I've had a baby. And I know for sure 1 month of recovery time is woefully inadequate. So I do not expect my dear Amy to be back up and making podcasts for you people in August. So I would probably bank on hearing from us sometime in the fall. I don't know when.
Right.
It all depends how well-behaved Cece is and how Amy's recovering from her birth. So just stay tuned and stay subscribed and keep an eye on our social media. And we will definitely announce when we're going to be back for season two, the new, possibly even improved IBS Freedom Podcast coming at you in fall 2022, hopefully.
Yeah. And I think, again, like for I always think it's funny because I wonder how people perceive our preparation for these episodes, like what people think about how we prepare. And honestly, we are like, what do we want to talk about today? Oh yeah, that sounds good. And then we're winging it. We have no like real framework, which is good. Like, again, I think we get all the information in. It's just I think we were hoping maybe in season two we have a bit more of a framework and structure.
Yes.
Right, that might be make it an easier follow. It might make the information a little bit better constructed. So,
yeah,
which I think is a good thing, for sure.
I think, like you said, we get the information out one way or another, but we kind of rabbit trail all over the place. But yeah, I think just trying to be cognizant from this point on of like people just want information. And they want to feel better. And it would make sense to have some logical flow where it's like, okay, what are the symptoms of the thing we're talking about? You know, Crohn's, SIBO, IBS, Candida. Like, talk about the symptoms so that the people can identify, hey, does this matter to me? Do I have any of these symptoms? And then we could go into, like, how would you test for it? But, you know, if it's something that could be tested for. And then get into, like, interpreting those results a bit, and then get into what do you do from like a nutrition or an herbal perspective. So I think that's probably going to be the basic framework of like, what is it? How do I know if I have it? from a symptom and a lab testing kind of standpoint, and then we can get into the actual treatment. And don't worry, there will still be stories and rabbit trails and random shit scattered throughout, but I think we're going to have that at least basic framework going forward. So we're already planning season two for you people. And I'm delighted and just delighted to get there with you guys. But first, we're going to just reflect on season one. I feel like this would be the part of the episode, if this was like a TV show, where we would have like a montage with sappy music playing.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
For sure. For sure.
But, you
like
know,
like that one graduation song.
Exactly.
As we go on, we remember all times we... Yep.
But in lieu of that, because we would probably get this episode
my voice
taken down for
is
copyright...
Not... You mean my voice isn't sufficient enough?
Your voice was very nice, actually.
Thank you.
I was pleasantly surprised. But I was thinking, like, we can't have the actual clip because then YouTube will take it down for copyright infringement.
Right.
But I think let's talk about some of what we've learned on the pod and some of the things. And also we could have the perspective on this episode of, like, what can our peeps do for the next month or two or three? Like, what do they, what should they be focusing on when they are in limbo without a new episode to listen to? So that, that being said, which would you like to start with? What they could do in limbo or big lessons from our 100 episodes, 99
episodes? Maybe the limbo thing. Just, I mean, I think from a practicality standpoint might be of high importance. And I think, again, we could transition into, like, what are our favorite highlights or moments or concepts that have come out of the 100 episodes so far? I mean, there's been so much because we've done 100, but or again, like, just episodes that we think are really helpful. In terms of what I think people can do, like, I just think when in doubt, look at stress broadly. So when I think of stress broadly, I think of, like, nutrition-related stress. So, like, are you getting enough nutrition? We've harped on that we've beat that dead horse.
Cue the eye roll, people.
Right.
Like, oh, here they go again.
But I think even kind of some macronutrition, like, you could get a little bit more into the weeds there. But I think analyzing, do you have any nutrition-related stress? Do you have any... like, kind of what we typically think of as stressors, like mental, emotional stressors, that might need tending, whether it's you remove things that are just creating a lot of problems or you're building resilience to the stress that can't, that, you know, there's some stressors that are good stress, like having a baby. Like, there's just a natural stress that comes with that. Like, but again, I wouldn't not have a baby. That's something that provides joy and all these other great things. But again, if you're in, like, a crappy relationship or, you know,
a job that you hate, a commute that you hate.
Right. Well, those types of things, again, like, if you can adjust, then that's great. And again, there's other stressors that we can't adjust that we just have to adapt to and build resilience to. So I think those kind of things and other lifestyle stressors like sleep, and movement and getting sun, like, all those core elements, you know, almost all the time when I talk to clients, it's like there's at least something in there that maybe they haven't given as much time and attention to. And even if you just start with one of those things and start chipping away at it, I think can be really, really valuable. And a lot of times it's underestimated, but again, I think looking at the stressors broadly can be really helpful, especially if you've been at this a while and feeling like you're a little stuck. Just going back to basics is helpful.
Yeah. And I think that's actually my biggest recommendation too, is, like, the foundations are foundational for a reason.
Right.
So even though the double-edged sword of it is, the foundation basic stuff is so basic sounding that we tend to get caught up in the I'm special mentality. And, like, I get it too, so I'm not knocking it.
Right.
But we all kind of think, like, I'm special, I'm unique, just improving my sleep couldn't possibly be that important for me. Or, like, just exercising can't make that much of a difference for me because I need some magic herb. And it's like, no, right. You probably don't need some magic herb. It's probably the foundational stuff that's impacting a lot of your physiology and making this journey a lot harder than it needs to be. So I think similarly, like, psychological stress, physical stress, sleep, nutrition. We talked about this kind of recently on some episodes too. Like, you can download the Chronometer app for free and use a free profile, or you can use it on, like, your PC or your Apple device. Like, you can use it on the web browser or on a smartphone. So if you're listening to us right now, I know darn well you're listening to us from a smartphone or a computer. So therefore, you have the capability to use Chronometer for free. And you can kind of put your money where your mouth is and see, okay, is your nutrition as rock solid as you think it is? Or is there something that you might need to pay more attention to? So, you know, just looking at, are you eating enough calories? Are you getting a, you know, reasonable balance of your macros? Are you hitting the mark with your vitamins and minerals, and figuring out how you want to tackle that, whether it's from a food perspective or a supplement perspective or both? But that's really key. I think also, honestly, another thing that people could do while they're in the limbo waiting for us to come back for season two, try to take a week off of all of your supplements and see what happens. You'd be surprised. You're missing my facial expressions if you're not on YouTube right now. You'd be surprised how many people feel like crap because they're taking 8 million supplements and just dropping all the supplements for like a week or two is, honest to God, it's like a vacation. You feel like, oh my God, I don't have to remember all my pills like an old lady. This is amazing. And you might find that you feel better in some ways. And then you could always bring stuff back in one at a time. And you could be like, okay, I was without my supplements for 2 whole weeks, but I really have an inkling that like the magnesium is important for me. So then you can bring back the magnesium or the multi or the fish oil or whatever it might be. But you can start kind of layering it in bit by bit. But more often than not, just taking a break from the supplements and the pills and the potions is really good for your mental health and your physical health. So that's something that you could experiment with even in our relative absence.
I love that idea. And again, I think you're right. You're right. I think when it comes to supplements too, I feel like sometimes when you say that, like, people's reaction is like, I need these. I rely on these. Like, they're my support. Like, I don't know how I'm going to do without them. And even if I'm like, we're weaning off of stuff with my clients, like, they've made progress. We're seeing which supplements they actually need at this particular point in time. We're weaning off things. I always tell them, like, you can always jump back on things. Like, going off of something for a week is not going to be a big deal. And again, it can give you important information as to, is this thing actually helping me at this point? Maybe it served a purpose in the past. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, and then the over-supplementing side of the equation, you could have things interacting in a weird way. Just that, I know you mentioned the number of capsules before that you're taking.
You have to digest all that cellulose stuff and gelatin and whatever else it's wrapped in. Yeah, and this also brings up something too, which is, I think a lot of people, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people get into that headspace of like, I can't go without my supplements for a week or two. And they get that kind of like reaction because they've been told the bullshit lie over and over again that if you stop the low FODMAP diet or if you stop these antimicrobials, the SIBO is going to grow back. The candida is going to grow back. It's going to win. You're going to lose. And therefore, you're doomed for all of eternity. And that's not how it works. It's like that meme, right? Or that GIF or whatever, like, that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. Like, you can, honest to God, you can take a break from something for a week or two. The SIBO's not going to immediately grow back. The candida's not going to immediately grow back. You can get away with doing that and just see if, just cutting out that, you know, the cellulose capsules and the gelatin capsules and, like, having fewer things interact with each other and, like, overwhelming your body. Like, if you think of it, too, it's almost like, if prepare for comedy if you're on YouTube. If you're listening to this in audio format, I don't know what to tell you. You're going to miss out. But if you imagine, like, your body's here, and let's say we want your body to be here. Like, we want you to take one step back from wherever you are, for in whatever context. Well, one supplement might be pushing you, like, that way a little bit. Another supplement's, like, pushing you that way a little bit. Right. One of them's kind of, like, swishing you down a bit. One, like, you have all of these different directions that you're shoving your body, trying right. to get it on the track or the direction that you're looking for. But that's really overwhelming and confusing for your physiology to have 8 million things coming at it all the time with, like, 8 million different, you know, vectors right. of movement. So just, like, giving your body a breather to reestablish, hey, what is my actual baseline right now without any alteration? It could be really insightful, and it could be a really nice little holiday.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think another aspect that could be helpful for people, and I'll have clients do this usually at the beginning of working with them, and sometimes we check back in, but just taking a bit of time to reflect on where your headspace is. So what beliefs might you have at this moment that aren't really serving you super well, I think can be a really good question to reflect on. Again, maybe it's that you think I need to be on this restrictive diet to starve the SIBO. So, like, yeah. that could be a belief or fear that you have. What kind of things could you do to maybe reframe that? Or again, how can yeah. you reframe that in a way that is something that is not... is actually serving you well and is going to promote progress versus hinder progress. And I think when you can yeah. isolate some of your core beliefs and fears and things that are tend to be holding you back, and you can either reframe them or kind of work on the mindset from a couple different angles, it can be yeah. really helpful. And again, it can take some time. I always tell people too, you know, every time you sort of push yourself out of the comfort zone, there can sometimes be newer things that come up. That you have to work through. And so, like, yeah. giving yourself grace through that process that, like, you've might have had, again, medically induced trauma and have been dealing with these gut issues, and there it's no wonder that you have some of these beliefs that might not be serving you well. But just, again, spending some time reflecting and trying to reframe and getting curious about your beliefs, I think can be really valuable, because I've seen so many people to where it's a make or break issue. Like, once we can yeah. get the mindset right, then they can make a lot of progress. And then there's other people too that I just feel like maybe I don't have the skills or scope of practice to get to help them completely with mindset. It seems to set them back. So, you know, it's just a really, really important issue that I don't think's harped on enough. And so just taking yeah. some time to reflect on that, I think, could be important too.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. And I was trying to find a post. I saw something on Instagram like yesterday or the day before that I was trying to find, but I didn't save it. It was a simple blast. Post. And I think it was a simple post. And I think it said something to the effect of observe your thoughts. If you have a thought that begins with what if, that's most likely an intrusive thought, and it deserves to be questioned. Like, don't take that as the truth, mm-hmm. or, like, don't get hung up on that. And I think I love the quote that anxiety is like a misuse of imagination, I think might be the quote, or something to right. that effect. It's, you know, our brains are going to come up with a million different scenarios and worst case scenarios.
Right.
Not all of them are going to come true. Very few of them are probably going to come true. And it's, I want to touch on something too, because you said reframe. And I think that that's worth doing, but also know that reframe doesn't mean that you have to wear rose colored glasses all the time.
Right.
Like, it's, right. it's not to say the love of my life died of cancer and now I need to spin that positively right. and, like, find the blessing in that tragedy. It's not to say that, or like, I've had, you know, IBS, severe IBS for 10 years, and now I have to find, like, the rosy right. silver lining in all of that. It's not to say that, it's just that examining your thoughts, examining your beliefs, examining those what if scenarios, those examining the predictions that you have about the future and predictions that you made in the past and how many of them actually came to fruition. Stuff like that, where it's just like getting kind of curious, maybe following a couple of psychologists on Instagram, even. There's right. some really good ones out there. There are books, there are podcasts, there are so many good resources where you can kind of start to examine this sort of stuff a little bit. We did an episode with Paul, my hypnotherapy guy, recently, and that was really good. I'm actually a little bit sad that that one hasn't gotten the listenership that some of our other episodes got. I don't know if you noticed that, but like the views on that video are lower than a lot of our others. And I was like, no, aww, this is the best one. So that made me a little sad. But yeah, like just know that you are not your thoughts. Like our smarty pants thinky brain has convinced us that the inner voice in our head that's thinking all the thoughts, that is us. And we are more than just that voice. We're right. more than just our thoughts. So examining yeah. that in whatever way you feel.
Well, and I think too, like I like that you bring up, you know, you don't have to look at everything through rose-colored glasses, but you also can't yeah. be looking at everything through negative glass. Like, I think there's a balance that needs to be struck. And I really like, I know we talked about it in the Julia King episode, but she had something within her framework that she uses a lot. And I've used this with clients too, where it's called the even though exercise. I don't know if you remember this, but it's like, you know, even though I had a reaction to that food, it tasted really good and I really enjoyed it. So you kind of pair like, you know, and something maybe a little bit more negative to something positive, so there's a balance there. Yeah. Or again, like even though I'm bloated today, I was still able to get out and go on a walk, or even though I'm bloated today, I was still able to go meet some friends and have a really good time. So it's kind of balancing out some of this stuff versus like kind of hypervigilance of the negative side of the equation. So again, I know we talked about that in the Julia King episode, but I think it's a really nice mental trick to help you kind of not rose-colored glasses everything, but know that there's a you can strike a nice balance between some of the negative things that are happening and the positives.
Yeah, and I love that, and I'm going to use that a little bit more, I think, because I had forgotten about that tool, but it's so simple and easy to do. Yeah, it's... I think the term that I've seen thrown around is toxic positivity.
Yeah.
Like, we're not looking for toxic positivity here. We're not looking for you to be like 10 out of 10 happy about everything. Like you can still acknowledge that some things kind of suck, but not dwelling on it. And I think that's one of the things with mental health that I think is probably the most important, is just trying to not get stuck in one pattern. Like if you have the catastrophizing, what if, like trying to acknowledge when it's happening, recognize that, and then pull yourself out of it can be really helpful. Just not spiraling or getting too stuck in one thing. But I like that exercise. And it also paints the picture that like your life and the quality of your life is a mixture of so many different factors.
Right.
But when you hyper-focus on one, it can feel like your whole life is that one thing or that one experience or that one symptom. But it's like helping you kind of broaden out and go, oh, even though I was bloated today, I was still able to go on this fun trip to the concert or whatever. So I really like that tool. That was one of my favorite tools, and I kind of forgot about it briefly there.
Yeah, again, I forget when I heard it before we actually had the episode, but again, I've really liked that tool. I think you're right. It can help you get out of, what's the word? Like being consumed by all the SIBO stuff and again, the SIBO symptoms and that kind of stuff, and looking a little bit outside of that. It's not that you don't acknowledge those things at all, but you kind of acknowledge that there is still some positive good things in your life. It's not all just negative. And again, you can, I think it's easy to get kind of eaten up by the SIBO space and monitoring symptoms and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, it's very easy, like we've talked about, to let it consume your life and kind of like stop living your life to some extent,
right?
Because you feel like you're not allowed to live your life until you heal your gut.
Right.
But in a lot of ways, for many people, they're not going to heal their gut until they start to live their life a bit more.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that that's a really great one. Yeah, I think, again, like going back to basics, right? Like it's the basic foundational stuff. They're foundational for a reason. Like mental health is foundational for a reason. I think also we might've mentioned this recently, but I want to reiterate it again, something to think about again, like in our relative absence. I know like you're probably still going to be posting on your Instagram account until Cece's born, pretty much. I would imagine. And then like, I'm still out there. I've still got my YouTube channel and my Instagram and stuff. So like, we're not going to vaporize entirely. We just won't be here with you in this weekly format for a little bit, because we want to give Amy time to just enjoy new baby smells and new baby snuggles and get the hang of motherhood. But I think also, so yeah, like going back to basics, like just basic nutrition in the sense of like, if you forgot SIBO existed, if you forgot that IBS existed, and you just went to like a regular nutritionist or a regular nutrition class, and they taught you about how many calories you need, macro balance, and like vitamins and minerals and fiber, like go back to the really basic nutrition stuff, the non-glamorous stuff, and see if there's some optimizing you can do there. The stress and the sleep and the mental health. Take a break from your supplements and see how you do with that.
And I think, too, like, the nutrition side of the equation is just going back to actually focusing on nourishing versus restricting.
Yes. Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that out there because that's really at the core. It's like when everything is so restrictive focused, you can't really nourish. Or it's very hard to stay nourished. Most people don't succeed from what I've seen. So you're right.
Yes.
I think if even thinking of it as, you know, going to a regular nutrition, going back to how to best nourish the body versus trying to starve the SIBO.
Yeah, exactly. Just go back to the basic stuff. Because when people hyper-focus on the starving and the killing, it's like you have the blinders on and you completely leave out some really important aspects of nutrition a lot of the time.
Right.
So yeah, like going back to the basics, but I want to point out, and I think like this kind of proves the point to a degree that we're talking about here, or it reinforces the point. There's this belief that is pervasive in the world. It's pervasive in the functional medicine and the naturopathic fields. I think it's very pervasive in like the IBS and the SIBO and the gut health space. And it's just not true. And there's the saying that everything starts with the gut, right? Like naturopaths have been saying that for 100 years or whatever it might be. And this idea that everything starts with the gut and the logic that follows that statement usually goes, therefore, if you have anything going on with your gut, it's probably causing all the rest of your health problems. Mm. Therefore, you need to hyper-focus on the gut and ignore all the other stuff. And I find that this happens with functional medicine and naturopaths. It's like they might evaluate you for 8 different things. They might evaluate you for SIBO and estrogen dominance and histamine stuff and iron deficiency and thyroid deficiency. But the minute you get a diagnosis back in the gut specifically, the minute you get diagnosed with leaky gut or SIBO or candida or dysbiosis, even the holistic professions laser focus on the gut so much. And it's this assumption that if we heal your gut, then magically everything else will get better.
Right.
Like, oh, your anxiety will go away. Your energy will magically come back. Your estrogen and your hormones will magically balance themselves.
Right.
Your thyroid, your autoimmunity will magically go away. And I'm not saying that's impossible at all, actually. What I'm saying is that we need a little bit of both, because it's not a one-way street. It's not just your gut sending out a million different one-directional arrows. Did you like that, by the way? Like,
right.
This
it almost seems more linear in a way versus just a complex network of so many different interactions of different systems.
Yeah. It is. It's complex, but I think, like, if even just taking away some of the complexity, yes, you have, like, 8 million, you know, tissues and cells and enzymes and processes in the body. You don't need to support all of them intrinsically, like, intensely. But if you have gut stuff going on and you also have some hormone stuff going on, maybe work on both. Like, this idea that we could just hyper-focus on the gut and completely ignore the rest of the body, or spend 95% of our effort on the gut and maybe spend, like, 5% on the rest of the body, it doesn't work. And it just, that's where people will start saying, oh, because we haven't been able to heal my gut and I still have my anxiety, I must have the world's worst case of SIBO, and oh my God, I'm doomed forever. And it's like, no, you were putting all your eggs in the one basket, and you really need to disperse them more evenly originally. Like, you can do stuff for the gut. You can support your motility. You can support your microbiome. You can, you can take probiotics. You can do antimicrobials. You can do the gut things, but also, like, focus on the other stuff that's burdening your body and flaming you out, so that then your gut has a fighting chance to actually flourish.
Right. Like, if you have, you know, some mental health stuff or some past trauma, like, go to therapy or do hypnotherapy. Or again, incorporate meditation if you have high stress.
There's so many options.
I think, again, like, there's definitely the gut is the problem 100% of the time, I feel like. And again, maybe that's a part of the equation, but it's often overestimated. In the holistic health space, for sure.
Yeah. And then those are the accounts that you're seeing probably on Instagram, Facebook, etc. And it just makes it really confusing for the end user who's like, oh, I see that all the time with my FODMAP Freedom students. I literally had 2 one-on-one calls with my FODMAP Freedom students today. And both of them said, yeah, like, I just get really confused because, like, I see so much on the internet and I wonder if it's applicable to me, or, like, I see so much on the internet that's really dogmatic and, like, black and white, yes and no, this is good, this is evil. And they were happy that I kind of helped them cut through some of the bullshit in FODMAP Freedom and figure out, like, here's what you actually need to care about, here's what you probably don't. Like, just focus your attention on these 3 things instead of feeling like you have 8 million things that you need to work on. But yeah, I think that the gut is super important. We would not have this podcast if that was incorrect. Like, obviously the gut is important, the microbiome is important, digestive enzymes, like, all these things are important, but it's not going to magically cure everything in your body. You still need to pay attention to sleep and stress and nutrition and like, moving your physical body and, like, doing all of the other things. You still need a healthy body built around a healthy gut. And you can't have, you're not going to have a perfectly healthy gut with a super crapped out inflamed body. Like, you really need to work on both.
Right. You almost have to work on, like, building resilience in your body.
Yes.
With the foundational pieces. And maybe, again, you have to focus on certain other systems too. But yeah. Yeah, that's a good
holistic. That's what it should be. Again, it's when we hyper focus on the gut so much, it's almost akin to what we razz modern medicine for. Like, if you go to the rheumatologist and they just give you an NSAID for your joint pain, or if you go to, you know, your endocrinologist and they just give you levothyroxine, but they don't have any conversation about, like, Hashimoto's and the inflammation and that sort of stuff. It, you know, it's like we razz on conventional Western medicine for hyper-focusing on one body part. Really, truthfully, the functional space does the same thing. It's just we kind of give this illusion of otherwise. If you're diagnosed with 8 different things, but there's no gut stuff whatsoever, they're probably still going to hyper focus on the gut, honestly. But anyway, and again, like, sometimes that serves people, but I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that. So I would say also, as you're going through your journey, just keep in mind, you don't necessarily want to hyper-focus on the gut. Like, work on the rest of your body. Try to, honestly, the best way you could see a healing journey, in my opinion, is that you're just trying to build a strong, healthy, resilient body.
Right.
And end of list.
Right.
Like, you want all of your organs, all of your body parts to be happy and healthy, and that goes back to those foundational foundations. Mm-hmm. Like, getting good quality sleep and getting enough sleep, foundational for every cell in your entire body. Managing your stress and your mental health as best as you can, foundational for your entire body. Eating enough calories, your entire body will appreciate that. So, anyway, not to continue to beat a dead horse here, but...
No, all this is very true. Yeah, do we want to get into, like, favorite highlights, moments. Favorite moments? I have a starter. Oh, well, yeah. This is just kind of word to the wise from our podcast, is just don't drink creek water. I know that that was going way back to episode one, where...
Way back! Coming full circle here.
Where Nikki...
Oh gosh, we were just babies.
We were podcast babies. Where when we were podcast babies, I had to hear about Nikki's... I wouldn't say I got the pleasure of hearing about it, but I was horrified to hear about Nikki drinking creek water in college.
I was not a child. I was legally an adult when I did this.
Well, I like, feel
wrap
like
your
it,
head around that.
It was the craziest story because it's like every potential thing that could have gone wrong, I feel like went wrong because you drank the creek water and then you passed out or something, hit your head, probably had
got
like
a wicked concussion.
Right, had a concussion. So brain gut axis potentially impaired. Absolutely. Then you said you had Tums or something on the bus. You
Tums and pink lemonade.
Yeah.
Minute Maid pink lemonade.
Tums and some pink lemonade.
Yep.
So then you were kind of taking out your stomach acidity. And then didn't you have to race too? You probably pushing your body to the limit when it needed to have some time to recover from your creek water. But yeah, that's an insane story.
I know. I honestly, on a pretty regular basis, I think I should either write a book about all of the absurdity in life and like just documenting some of this, or I should have a sitcom. Because it's like, I'm creative, but I'm not so creative that I could make that up. I swear to God that all happened.
Right.
And yes, it was my old man coach who, you know, he was at least in his late 60s, if not early 70s, when he was our coach. Right. And as far as like a college D1 coach, like he was kind of an old dude to be coaching. Right. And we were quarantined. We had to sit behind him on the bus ride to Philly. And the entire, like, 7-8 hour bus ride from Buffalo to Philly, every time we regained consciousness, because for the record, a friend of mine did this with me. I was not the only dum-dum. You left out the best part of the story. The reason this happened was because we didn't have our water, or we had brought water bottles, but it was so hot, we guzzled our whole Nalgene water bottle in like a nanosecond in practice. And we had the rest of practice and we didn't have any water and we were very, really thirsty. And we're looking at the creek and we're thinking like, oh, it looks real nice today. And it's cold. It's refreshing. And all of our classmates or all of our teammates are like, no, don't do it. And Jill says, and I quote, because all of our teammates were saying, do you know how dirty that creek is? And Jill said, word for word, it's a natural kind of dirty. And I thought, yeah, that's sold, done. So we filled up our Nalgenes. We drank not one, but two Nalgenes each that day of creek water. It wasn't like a sip.
Oh
it was
my
a
God.
Lot of
I didn't
water.
Realize it was two Nalgenes.
Two Nalgenes. And we were happy as pigs and shit. We thought that was the greatest ever. We're like, oh, our thirst is so quenched. This is refreshing. And then we became violently ill shortly after. But yeah, our coach, our old dude coach, we were quarantined behind him in the bus ride to Philly. And every time we regained consciousness from our nap, he would pop Tums in our mouth and he would give us pink lemonade. Be like, here, take this, hydrate.
He's so, kind of sounds like a like did. He kind of sounds like a rub some dirt on it type of coach.
He was. He was an odd duck for sure. Yeah. He there's many a story I could tell about Rudy, but I will refrain. But that was one of the odd ones for sure. Where it was like, here, Thompson pick lemonade, or maybe it was Zantac and pick lemonade. Just killing stomach acidity. Right. And the kicker is, my mom told me to get a stool test done after that. Did I listen to her? No. And I'm a good kid, and like I listened to my mom. I was not one of those teenagers who's like, moms don't know anything. I've always been like a mom kid.
Right.
It wasn't that. I just like got distracted and I felt fine and it slipped my mind. And then literally like 7 or 8 years later, when I had IBS, I ended up doing stool testing, and it turns out I had not one but two parasites. God knows if I was carting those around the entire time.
Right.
Or if they were brand new. I don't know, because I never did a stool test. But in retrospect, mom was right. I wish I had done a damn stool test after drinking the creek water and getting so sick. But
oh, man.
It's this wisdom that I will pass on to my daughter.
Right.
Who, by the way, can I just say, Mike and I are doomed. I just want to share two examples of why we're doomed as parents. Jess is going to be, I don't even, like, either a world dictator or a very high power CEO or like a very scary lawyer. Or those are her three job prospects in life. I can't imagine her working an entry level job. I can't imagine her being an employee. But she's so sure of herself, and it's so beautiful to see. But also I'm like, you're going to burn bridges in your life.
Oh God. Yeah.
Last night, we're getting ready for bed, or I don't know what we're doing. And I paused and I asked her, I said, hey, Jess, and I forget how this came up in conversation, but I said, hey, Jess, have you ever been wrong about anything in your entire life? And quickly, with no hesitation, with all 100% certainty in her voice, she quickly said, no.
Well, there you go.
Can you imagine walking the earth with that degree of confidence? It is mind-boggling. So that's one. The other example, I don't know if I shared with you. So Jess has gotten into Harry Potter in the last year and a half. And we were doing one of those online Hogwarts house quizzes where it's like, are you a Gryffindor or a Slytherin? Right. And you're going through, it's like 10 questions. We get to one question and it says, there's a wizard ball that you really want to go to, but your mom and dad say no. What do you do? Number one, you listen to them. With no questioning, mom and dad know what's best. That would have been me, for the record. Number two, you try to rationalize with them and explain to them why you deserve to go to the wizard ball. Number three, I forget one of the options, but the third option I remember was you sneak out, what they don't know won't hurt them. Quickly and without hesitation, she definitively tells me, what on earth are you doing, woman?
Sorry, my mic fell. The whole thing fell. Hold on, give me a minute.
It was Cece's fault. It was Cece's fault. She's like, I'm a coming.
Yeah, she's making herself known.
She's like, you're not gonna need this mic, Ma. Get it out of here.
Was intense. Sorry, I didn't mean to mess up your story.
That's all right. I don't even know how that happened. I didn't catch if you like whacked it or what exactly happened.
No, I think it just fell. It was a spontaneous.
That's gonna be right up there with when I spastically flicked my glasses off my face an episode or two back. That was good times too, when they went flying across the room for no reason. But anyway, so my child quickly, definitively, with no hesitation whatsoever, says, sneak out, what they don't know, what won't hurt them. And then she proceeds to outline her 7-point plan for how she would get away with this, which includes taking a house key with you so you can get back in when you sneak back in late at night, and distract mom and dad so they don't know you left.
Oh, God.
This was like a week after her 6th birthday, for the record. Like, she had just turned 6 when she's telling me all this. 7-point plan for how to get out. And I don't know how... The only thing I can say is that that came from deep in her soul. Because I know the TV that she watches. At our house, she watches almost exclusively PBS. She watches wholesome stuff like Arthur and Motley of Denali. She'll watch like occasional junky Nickelodeon or Disney kind of stuff at grandma's house, but it's not the majority of what she watches. And the only thing I can think of is not Jess, but like a previous life of her. Like this little spirit has snuck out of the house before. Not my child, obviously, because she's only six. But in a previous lifetime, she was well-versed in sneaking out late at night and distracting her parents. And she has carried that knowledge forward into this lifetime.
Oh my god!
That's all I could think of, because I don't know where she learned it otherwise, other than experience.
Right.
So yeah, we're host. But anyway, going back though, I will counter one of your highlights. One of my favorites, actually, I really enjoyed the FMT episode and hearing about your poopcation. I completely forgot that about your story when we had like initially started podcasting together, but it was so fascinating hearing about your experience and like how that clinic helps people like feed the microbiome that they're acquiring and really being good shepherds of the new microbiome that you're inheriting. Like that was so fascinating to hear about. And I really enjoyed learning about that.
Yeah. I think too, like with that as well, it's interesting to hear kind of my experience in comparison to what's done here, where it's just kind of like, oh, take your family member, like whoever you can find poop to your GI doc who does one fecal transplant, versus kind of the intensity with which the clinic that I went to focuses on like donor quality and that kind of stuff. And again, once you get it, really taking care of the microbiome with different fibers and things like that. But I'm glad that you enjoyed that episode. I think I've really liked hearing about the Nervines. So again, that's just something that I wasn't as, I was aware of Nervine herbs and things like that, but just I hadn't ever deep dove into that area. And I think sort of with your knowledge as more of like an amateur herbalist, it was nice to kind of walk through the different Nervine herbs, and their uses and things like that. And I think just even as our relationship has built over, has it almost been like 2 years? I mean, it has to almost be like 2 years of us podcasting together. Like, it's nice to be like, hey, what do you think of this herb? Or like, you know, is this herb safe for pregnancy or whatever? Like, that's nice. But the Nervine herbs, I think, can be incredibly useful for a lot of different situations. But it was nice to kind of learn more about that.
I've enjoyed that too. Like, kind of to put in perspective, like, I came at herbs from a more allopathic feeling direction. Because, like, in functional medicine, we use herbs, but they're all, like, proprietary blends from Apex Energetics and Biotics Research and, you know, insert name of company here. And it's very, like, it's like somebody went on PubMed, like, Tatis Karazian went on PubMed and researched all the herbs that could be good for serotonin. And then he put them all in one product and labeled it serotonin active. And, you know, similarly, like, this is the blood sugar formula. This is the hypoglycemia formula. This is the iron formula. This is the SIBO formula. And, like, herbs can work that way to a certain degree. So, like, I know, for example, like, Apex, to pick on them for a sec, they have, I kid you not, they have one product called Adaptocrine. That's their stress / adrenal support product. End of list.
Right.
And like some people, as you might expect with that kind of way of handling herbs, like some people try Adaptocrine and they love it. They think it's the greatest thing ever. And it's like, you know, the best anything they've ever tried. And then a lot more people try Adaptocrine and they're like, eh, like, I don't really think it's doing much. Right. And I'll pull this up. If I spelled it correctly. Yeah, here we go. So like as an example, to kind of nerd out for a quick second here. So Adaptocrine has a few different not nervines, adrenal, like, adaptogen herbs. It's got Asian ginseng, ashwagandha, holy basil, rhodiola, and eleuthero, Siberian ginseng. So, like, even amongst, even if you look at it from, like, a stimulating, sedating, or neutral standpoint, Asian ginseng, super stimulating. Ashwagandha, usually relaxing. Very, very rarely people find it stimulating. Holy basil's a little bit of a wild card. Usually it's kind of got, like, a neutral effect, maybe slightly stimulating or relaxing for the individual. Rhodiola tends to be fairly stimulating feeling and, like, kind of wake up the brain. And then eleuthero, some herbalists say it's kind of neutral. Some people say it's more of a relaxing adaptogen. Mm-hmm. So even from, like, an energetic standpoint of, like, is it stimulating you or relaxing you? It's right. Like your body almost doesn't know what to do. You're giving it uppers and downers at the same right. time. And right. it's just a very confusing formula to look at. So as I got into herbal medicine more and I started going to herbal medicine classes and learning with a lot more herbalists and getting more books in my library about herbal medicine, I really enjoyed learning about adaptogens and nervines in particular, because I think that they could be so useful, but the way that they're put into formulas, like, a lot of the time is really bastardized. Right. And then people get mixed results, or they think that these herbs don't work. And it's like, no, you weren't on the right one for you. So if right. we can help you kind of tailor it, rather than having, like, a protocol. I would say this too, like, a lot of people reach out, I think, to both of us. I know I get this a lot on my YouTube channel. A lot of people ask us for protocols. And you'll notice we got through 100 episodes of this podcast without really saying the word protocol ever. We might have said the word protocol like twice on the whole season, because there is no protocol. You're right, all unique right. snowflakes, and you all need different things. And even like, okay, what's your SIBO protocol? Like, okay, it depends. What's your right. what's your protocol for like fatigue or adrenal fatigue or somebody like who wants more energy? I don't know. Like, do they need more right. mitochondrial support? Do they need stimulating adaptogens, nourishing adaptogens? Do they need nervines? Do they need better sleep? Like, it really depends on the individual. But I appreciate that about herbal medicine and that field. And that's why I'm getting a lot more into that in recent years, because I find that it's so much better and more effective to dial in the herbs for the individual rather than just saying, here's the magic blend that's good for stress. Like, right. any Joe Schmo can do a Google or a PubMed search for, like, adaptogen herbs, cram them all in one pill, and then market that as, like, the holy grail for stress. But I'm finding it very useful to recommend, like, one or two of these herbs or make right. a formula for the individual person. So I'm glad you liked this episode, too, because as I have learned this stuff, like, my mind was kind of blown, and I've seen how much more effective it is to handle the herbs that way. So I'm glad I was able to share that and bring it to everybody.
Yeah. And again, I think that I really liked the series we kind of did on the micronutrients. So, like, the B vitamins and the minerals. Just because, like, it was funny. Like, I feel like we were just, like, pulling up random micronutrients, and they were like, oh, this one's associated with this, and that, like, again, like, there were so many different, pretty much, again, every nutrient's important for gut function in some way.
Yeah.
And that was just an interesting ride to go down, and I think it highlights, again, an essential theme of the podcast, which you have to be nourished. But
yeah,
it was fun to kind of look at each nutrient. And again, maybe in the next season, we can kind of go into each one individually.
I think so.
But those, I like that series a lot of, I think there were three podcast episodes we did that were like, yeah. one was fat soluble with their minerals. Yeah. And then there was like two B episodes.
Yeah, B vitamins. With vitamin C was thrown in with the Bs, I think. And then we had another episode about minerals, too. So yeah, we did a series of four. I agree. That's something I want to do in season two, is have an episode on each individual nutrient and how it pertains to gut health, but also the health of the body overall.
Right.
I'm already lining up guests for season two, my darling.
Oh, wow.
And I haven't even told you. I told the ones I've talked to so far, I'm like, yo, like, my podcast co-host is having a baby. We won't be scheduling anything until the fall. But remember I was texting and emailing you over the weekend about the zinc lady?
Yeah.
I invited her on the podcast.
Whoa.
And she said yes.
Yay.
And that's exciting. She had a couple slides in her presentation at the conference about her colleagues and what they're researching. And she's going to see if she could put me in contact with a few of them and see if they would be willing to come on the podcast. So like they have in their group at the Linus Pauling Institute, somebody's researching vitamin D, particularly with an emphasis on antimicrobial effects. Oh, nice. Of vitamin D.
That'd be so yeah. cool.
There's a vitamin E expert that does research on vitamin E. There's, oh, one guy that she already put me in contact with, and she mentioned he's been on podcasts before, vitamin C. That one I'm actually really excited about, because when we did those episodes, I remember I was like, ah, I'll do like a quick PubMed search and see if there's anything about vitamin C and gut health. There was a ton.
Right.
And I didn't have time to go through any of it. But I remember on that episode, we were like, there's a lot of info about vitamin C affecting gut health. Wow.
Right.
Like possibly more than any of the other micronutrients that we looked at.
Right.
And then we didn't have enough time to really get into it. So I'm itching to do a vitamin C episode. And the zinc lady, Dr. Ho, has already put me in contact with somebody. And it sounds like he'd be receptive to be on a podcast because he's done it before. And I was like, yes.
Oh my god.
So, yeah. So... And I have a couple other ideas for season two also. And we fantasized about getting Lucy Mailing on here. So maybe we can hunt down
right.
Lucy Mailing finally.
The white.
She
the
didn't,
white,
she didn't
white
want
whale.
To be on season one yet.
Right.
Well, I don't even know if we reached out to her yet. But season two, we will entice her onto the podcast.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think.
Yeah.
I think, again, like, I know we talked a lot about, like, the mental side of things already this episode. But I think just. A lot of the guests we had that were more mental health slated, like Dr. Franklin, Dr. Julia King, Emma.
Emma was great.
Some of those are...
Paul, recently.
Right, Paul. I think, again, like, all those are really interesting just because I feel like they're under-discussed. And, again, it just could be so, 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 so valuable to work on some of the nervous system, mental health side of the equation.
Again, two-way street.
Right.
It's not unidirectional. It's not gut influence, brain, end of story. They both influence each other.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, those have been my favorites, too. I really enjoyed all of those talks. Because even though all of them, I think, all of those guys are psychologists. So they all have, like, the same profession, if you think of it that way. But they all had a slightly different way of explaining it, slightly different tool belt, and, like, recommendations and little gold nuggets.
Right.
And, yeah, I really loved all of those conversations that we had with the mental health kind of folk. So those are some of my favorites, too. I also really, really loved talking to Cindy about endometriosis.
Yeah.
That was such a valuable episode. And just, like, learning. Remember, that was the episode where we were, like, we were asking a bunch of questions and the poor woman was like, yeah, I don't know.
Right.
Like, that's a good question. I wish I knew the answer to that. And I think towards the end, I had to apologize. I was like, sorry, I asked you a million questions. She's like, no, they were all good questions. I wish I knew the answer to more. But just even like hearing her perspective of, yeah, like you can still have endometriosis and it could be affecting gut health and you have no menstrual symptoms whatsoever.
Right, right.
And that did pan out to be true for a patient of mine in recent months. Like, she had no period or menstrual related symptoms of endometriosis. She literally only had bloating. I had helped her with everything else, like constipation, diversifying her diet, energy, like everything else was great, but the bloating lingered. And then lo and behold, endometriosis. And it was like night and day difference for her after getting it laparoscopically removed. But, you know, even just hearing that and realizing that our ability to suss out endometriosis cases based purely off of, like, menstrual symptoms is really limited. And just, like, also when I had asked her, if you have bloating that's caused by endometriosis, would you expect it to be like worse around your period and then go away at certain times of the month? Or is it, could it always be there? And she said, no, it can always be there. That was unexpected too. I really thought, and honestly, like I feel a little pang of guilt and regret because I wonder how many cases of endometriosis have I missed in the past? Because I naively assumed that if it was endo, the bloating would only present around ovulation or the period.
Right.
Like day-to-day bloating across the entire duration of the menstrual cycle, I probably have missed some cases of endometriosis because my understanding of it wasn't that great. So I'm really glad that now I kind of like have that in my head a bit more clearly.
Right. Well, and again, I think that's the nice part about doing these podcasts, doing the podcast, because it's like, oh, we can gather more and more valuable information that will help us as clinicians, you know, throughout time. We're only human. There's only so much we can know, and it's kind of a constant learning curve. And again, the podcast gives us such a great opportunity to like touch base each week and continue to learn and grow. So. Absolutely. I think, and, again, like, that's what's been so that's just such a valuable part of doing this.
Yeah. Well, and learning from you, like, even, this is, like, truth moment here. I, even before podcasting with you for these 2 years, holy crap, even prior to that, like, I feel like I was still pretty good on the nutrition side from, like, compared to the rest of my field. In the sense of, I was a little bit more leery to do super, super restricted diets. I've always been more interested in, like, the additions rather than the subtractions. And like, I do have, like, the certification as a nutritional therapy practitioner. So, like, I have tried to learn more about nutrition than, like, the average bear in my profession. But even so, like, I've revamped a lot of the way that I work with people and the way that I work with nutrition specifically because of learning from you. So, like, for example, when I had a new patient start with me, I used to just have them do, like, a handwritten food diary. And I would even tell them, I'm like, yeah, I'm not so worried about quantity at this point. I just want to know what kind of food you're eating. Right. And they would type out the food diary, you know, of, like, Pringles, pizza, pasta, I don't know. Like, they would type out the names of the items they ate. And I would glance at the list and see, like, okay, does it look like they're getting some source of healthy fat, some sort of protein, some carbohydrate? Like, does it look like they're eating fruits and vegetables? You know, can I kind of circle a few things and give them ideas for, like, healthy replacements or taking a glance at it, does it look pretty healthy and well-rounded? I wasn't really focused on calories a lot because so many people focus on it from the weight loss perspective.
Right.
And with podcasting with you and learning so much from you, I've revamped it. So now everybody does like a couple day chronometer catch when they first start working with me. And, you know, it's like, it doesn't have to be perfect, but I want to get a ballpark of how many calories you're taking in and get a sense of like the macro breakdown a little bit more. It's not just about, are you generally eating healthier food or unhealthier food? Like, I've gotten a lot more in depth with that kind of assessment. And that's purely because we've talked every week and we've talked about how pervasive it is to see people way undershooting calories or people who might seem like they're eating healthy, but they have a deficiency or something that they're missing out on in their diet. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, again, I think that I think with our culture being so calorie, like low calorie centric, it's just so easy, especially for women, to kind of slip through the cracks. It's like, we're eating our cute smoothies and our cute salads, like portion sizes might not necessarily be conducive to what they need. But yeah, I'm happy to hear that. And again, I think the podcast has just, again, been overall so valuable for us to share our knowledge and then to have some of these other people on that are kind of more experts. One other expert that I felt was valuable that I think kind of added a little bit of, not necessarily like tools to my tool chest, but just had me thinking in a different way, was the pelvic floor episode with Dr. Olson. Is it Olson?
I think. Yeah.
Yep, is it Amanda?
Yep.
But she, again, like, I think I definitely knew Pelvic Floor was involved, but I don't think I knew that, like, the vagus nerve sort of dead-ended in the pelvic floor. In that sort of thing. So I found that episode really helpful, and since then I've been sort of directing some additional people to get pelvic floor based work done too. That's been way more on my radar since that episode.
I really loved the episode with Elena Kunicki and talking about like eating disorder, like disordered eating, and even just hearing her story about like when she was binging and restricting her diet and over exercising and under eating, like she had IBS and I forget what else, if she had like GERD symptoms, but she had a lot of gut symptoms, and I think if I remember correctly she was labeled as having IBS, and once she started fueling her body and she got off of like the chronic cardio kick and she started actually like lifting some weights, her gut symptoms totally resolved after that. But that whole episode was so good, and I still message her every now and then, and I joke with her still. I'm like, I'm not your target demographic, and I love following you on Instagram. Like, I've never struggled with disordered eating really beyond maybe a little blip of it when I had IBS, but as we talked about in episode one, like I didn't struggle with a lot of disordered eating that was like, I think quite to the degree that you did, at least. But yeah, I really enjoyed that episode, and she's such a valuable resource, and I still follow her on Instagram, and I learned so much from her still to this day on Instagram. So, and she was one of our early guests. I think she was episode 30 something.
I one thing I remember specifically from her podcast was she kind of talks about the pendulum swing that I see again with my clients. It's like, okay, because they've been so restrictive, it's like then they're just like, oh my gosh, I'm going to add all these things in. Or again, like sometimes that's the way it goes for some people, where it's like they're feeling like the pendulum swinging like way over here then, where it's like, you know, they haven't had cake in 3 years and then they let themselves have this amazing treat, and it's like naturally they're like wanting more of it, and you almost have to move through that pendulum swing to find balance. So I found that really interesting, because I definitely see that with my clients, where it's like sometimes again you're just gonna have to go overboard with certain things so that you can find that correct balance, and that kind of naturally happens usually for most people. But I like the idea. Like, it's an interesting concept that I see playing out a lot with different clients. The other thing I think that's so interesting about that whole discussion, I was just looking up some stats just so I could conceptualize, but like one study found 65% of American women between the ages of 25 and 45 report having disordered eating behaviors. So, I mean, if you think about that, like, that is, like, 2 out of 3 women-ish are having disordered eating patterns, and those things could lead to gut symptoms. So, you know, I like that you brought up her episode, because, again, I think there's sometimes when disordered eating patterns are going to be the main driver of gut symptoms, and again the SIBO IBS space will lead you more into the disordered eating rabbit hole, and that can be very counterproductive.
And the groups,
right?
Like, I've seen people straight up get attacked on groups. Not, I think the intention is not an attack, but it feels like an attack, where people will be like, here's the protocol I'm doing, what do you guys think? Or they'll ask a kind of innocent question. And then you get people who are like, oh my God, I can't believe you're eating grains. Those are inflammatory. What are you doing? You have to eliminate all the grains from your diet right now, right now, right now. Oh my God. And it's, it's just, there's so much opportunity for food fear and disordered eating in this space particularly. I think also the autoimmune folk too. There's a lot of food fear and restricted eating in that crowd as well. But yeah, it's just, it's most likely not serving you. Right. Even outright junk food has a place. Like, I think I might have told the story a little bit more recently, but one of my students in FODMAP Freedom, we were talking on the Q&A, and she was talking about, I forget the question now, but she was talking about how her whole diet is organic and soaked and sprouted, and she doesn't eat anything with a molecule of glyphosate on it, and everything is homegrown or gotten from the farmer's market and wild caught and pasture raised. And like, she's, you know, insert all trendy words, right? Pasture raised. And so she's going on and on about this. But on the flip side, she also wants to add more foods into her diet.
Right.
And, you know, she's expressing like she's feeling very stuck, but she's also kind of like almost pseudo bragging about how great her diet is. But also she's saying that she's not satisfied with her current diet. What can she do?
Right.
And I kind of intentionally wanted to like snap her the fuck out of it just for a sec and told her, what would you say if I said I want you to eat a Dorito? And she just like,
the horror.
And she looked visibly repulsed and startled by that suggestion. And, you know, I told her, you don't have to eat the Dorito. I'm just saying, like, I just wanted to see what you would do at the thought of eating a Dorito. Because, like, I think what you're describing is some really, like, orthorexic, like, eating. And it actually might be really therapeutic for you to eat something that is just bona fide garbage. And show yourself that not only will you survive, you'll probably be fine. And nothing too detrimental will happen. But yeah, I think that I like that you brought the pendulum up, because I just was talking about that with a patient. I've used that a lot since we talked to her. And yeah, like, it makes sense. If you're holding the ball up here, it's gonna, when it swings down, because you can't hold it there forever, when it swings down, it's gonna swing equal and opposite reaction to the other side. So the more you restrict, the more you're going to binge on the bad stuff, and then you're going to feel like garbage, and then you're going to incorrectly assume that it's the food that's intrinsically bad, when you just, it's the erratic kind of behavior. But I literally just had a conversation with a patient this month where, again, like, she was really under eating on her good days, quote unquote. And then she would overeat, and she's a vegan, so like, when she overdoes it, she'll overdo it on like nut butters. And she's swinging back and forth. And I told her, one of the very first things I recommended to her in our first appointment was, we need to find somewhere in the middle for you to kind of stick. So like, let's have you incorporate 2 tablespoons of nut butter into your diet every day or most days. And that way, like, you're not going to binge and eat the whole jar and then feel bad about it. But you're also not going to be restricted. But, like, let's see if we can meet in the middle. And I had to tell her, I was like, straight up, you might not love it for, like, the first month or two. There is a possibility that you're going to think I'm crazy and this is not going to be your favorite thing for the first month or two. But we need to teach your body that you are worthy of being trusted. And that you will nourish your body, and that it's not going to be this erratic on again, off again behavior. And you've just kind of got to wade through the mucky parts and get to the point where your body is confident in your ability to nourish it and confident in like the amount of energy you're giving it every day. And obviously we're going to work on other stuff in conjunction with this. Like, it turns out she's very, 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 very B12 deficient. So we're having her supplement B12. And we're doing some other stuff at this point now too. But yeah, it's like, sometimes even just like intentionally putting yourself right in the middle of the pendulum and acknowledging that it might not, it may or may not be super, super fun at first, but stick it out for a month or two. And I think that your body will get the memo that this is the new normal. I think that's really valuable too. And we talked about this, that another one of my favorites was the food reintroduction episode, where, you know, we were talking about, you might get some quote unquote symptoms when you introduce a new food. And it might not even be like a symptom per se, but things are going to change when you change your diet.
Right.
And it might take your microbiome a little bit of time to learn how to process it. It might take your digestive organs time to recognize that food again, and just kind of being patient. But we see this a lot, right? Where people will introduce a food and then they'll get a bit of bloating or a bit of stool change or a bit of some right. symptom, insert name of symptom. And they'll be like, oh, the food is bad. Oh my God. And again, like, I totally understand why you do that. I'm just telling you it's wrong. Like it's, that is not serving you. So just acknowledging that, like, having, you know, a 10 or 20% uptick of your symptoms or your bloating as you're making these changes is not only okay, but it's kind of to be expected to some degree, right. and to not totally freak out about it. And don't, like, don't abandon your mission to reintroduce foods if you have these minor changes. But if you eat, you know, if you reintroduce a food and then you have just straight up diarrhea from it, like, all right, that probably move that to the back of the list and try it again down the road. That's not the food for you at the moment. But I really enjoyed that episode too. Just letting yeah. people know what they can expect.
Right. Like, the, there's going to be an adaptation period and being okay mentally with that. And maybe you can do some things to try to support yourself physically with the adaptations. But again, there's only so much that you can control there. There's usually going to be a period of time.
Sorry, I just derailed you, didn't I?
What? But you raised that little finger.
I was thinking of something and I didn't want to forget it. So that was like my way of reminding myself and semi-reminding you. Sorry to interrupt your thought process. You know what's kind of weird and kind of bullshit, if I'm being honest? What would happen if somebody changed something, like introducing a new antimicrobial or an antibiotic, and then they felt worse when they took the antimicrobial? 99.99% of the time, they would be like, oh, I feel really bad. It's okay. It's just a die-off reaction. I just have to push through. I know it's going to be worth it in the end. What the heck happens when they introduce a new food and they feel like the littlest twinge of bloating and they're like, oh my God, the food is evil. I'm never eating this again.
Right.
Like, what kind of bullshit is that, guys? Come on. Right. If you're willing to say, I feel a little bit worse now, but it's not going to be forever. I'm going to push through because I know what I'm doing is worthwhile. If you're willing to say that with antimicrobials, why the heck can't you do it with food?
Right. I 100% agree. Such a good point.
Revelations.
Right. And then we have to talk about our time with Thomas. I feel like.
Oh, Thomas Bombus. Tom is the bomb.com.
Where he made you nervous that you had a bitter deficiency.
A bitter deficiency. Oh my gosh. I have to reach out to him again and tell him. I've determined I'm not bitter deficient so much as I just hate the taste of alcohol and I hate tinctures.
Right. Right.
Yes. Yeah, yep, the paranoia. And I horrified him because I said I don't like coffee. And I think he thought I was an alien. He didn't know what to do with me when I said I don't like coffee.
You're an inferior human or something.
Apparently.
But yeah, I like that episode. I mean, I loved all the talk about, like, bitters. I like that he kind of made some distinctions between, like, using food-based things that have, like, yeah. again, herbs with food. Like, there's sort of degrees of herbalism where, you know, just incorporating a bunch of foods and bitter things and stuff like that is going to be foundational.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of layer in some of the more therapeutic stuff.
Yeah. You reminded me of something, by the way.
Really?
So I just, so last weekend I was at a integrative medicine conference. The weekend prior I was at an herbal conference. And out in the boonies, this is where I believe I told you, right, that somebody hit a bear with her car.
Oh my gosh.
A bear. Like a black bear, I think. And it was the cub. Okay, so this conference is in the boonies of Black Mountain, North Carolina. It's a great conference. You drive up the world's longest driveway up into this YMCA Blue Ridge Assembly place where it's hosted. And it's literally like a 2 mile long driveway. And you climb up this mountain to get there. And it's a very like windy road. It's one way. A lot of it is. Well, this woman was driving up for the class and rounded a corner and a bear cub was in the road and she hit the dang bear cub with her car.
Oh, no.
Thankfully, it's a really slow go. You can only ever go like 15 miles an hour on that road.
Oh my gosh. And
people were like, did you kill it? And she was like, no, it was totally fine. It wandered off after that. But she said she got out of the car thinking oh my God, is it okay? I have to check on it. And then she quickly realized, oh, where's the mom? And she got back in her car. And sure enough, like 1 millisecond later, Mama Bear comes out of the woods with the other cub. And they just walk across the road and went about their lives. But several other people at the conference saw the mom and the two cubs and caught pictures of that. One guy, funny enough, one of the guys who lectures, his name is Seven Song. So it's spelled the number 7, no space, S-O-N-G. He's kind of known for like using herbs in like emergencies, like paramedic kind of herbalism, interestingly. And, you know, like literally like, there's a car accident on the side of the road. I'm going to go into the woods and find some berberine containing plants and shit and like bring it back. And it's so cool. He's the guy to hang out with if there's a zombie apocalypse and everything goes belly up, by the way. But anyway, on his way to the conference, he was in like an Uber and there was a car accident on the side of the road and they stopped and he like helped stabilize the person and just like helped kind of keep them stable until the paramedics arrived.
Right.
And then he had this whole big post about getting up to the Blue Ridge Assembly for the conference. And then after that, he saw the mom and the two bear cubs on his way up to the Blue Ridge Assembly. And he was just like, where am I? Like, this is so, so bizarre. Like, he saw a fresh, brand new accident and was able to, like, help stabilize the person. And then, like, 30 minutes later or something, he bumps into a mom and two bear cubs on the way up into the Blue Ridge. Yeah, it was bizarre. But anyway, you reminded me, the idea of using herbs in food, I really like, because, you know, pills get tiring after a while, and tinctures taste nasty. All of them do. And teas, like, you can only drink so much tea in your lifetime before you get sick of it. But I got a new book. It's called The Joy of Bonbons.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Look out.
She actually was saying at the event that she only printed, like, 20 or 30 of these for the conference, and then it's going to be available, like, as an ebook.
Yeah.
After, I forget. But I bought one of the hard copies, and I have some bookmarks in here.
Whoa.
Because I'm gonna start making me some bonbons.
Whoa.
And putting some powdered herbs in there.
Dang. Look
and
at you go.
Trying to get some herbs. Because, like, I just don't want to take tinctures. I'm kind of over it. But I could be persuaded to take an herbal bonbon. I found some recipes. Like, I could put lion's mane mushroom in a bonbon, for example. Or bacopa or ashwagandha. I don't know. I'm thinking about it. I'm gonna work on my bonbons later this week, perhaps.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait to hear about that.
That's like a little bit different than just eating arugula.
Right.
Which I think is more of what Thomas was talking about, like the green leafy vegetables. But my thing counts too, damn it. I want bonbons.
Right.
So, but yeah, I think there's so much around us that we can eat and people don't realize, like dandelions.
Right.
Like dandelions we can eat.
Right.
There's a great account on Instagram. Her Instagram handle is Black Forager. Have I sent you any of her stuff?
No.
She's fabulous. No, actually, curious. Funny enough, she lives in Cincinnati.
No
so
way.
So you might bump into her. Yes. I think her name is Alexis. I don't know if she's like an herbalist per se, but she's like a foraging expert and she makes really random, hilarious videos. Like she just seems
like
she
lives in Columbus.
Oh, shoot.
That's close.
Well, maybe she was in Cincinnati recently. Cause I swear in a recent reel, she was in Cincinnati and mentioned Cincinnati. But anyway, yes, but she's in your state. So I was close. But she's fantastic. But I'm surprised by the amount of stuff that she finds on like trails and walking around like in the yard or her neighbor's yard. And she's like, oh, that's edible. I'm going to cook it up.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. So, yeah, I'll have to check her out.
Yeah, she's a hoot. Her stuff is very entertaining, and it makes me want to go frolic in the woods and find, like, chicken of the woods and right. stuff that I can eat.
Love it.
But anyway, that was a tangent. But yeah, I've loved all of our guest episodes. I mean, I love talking to you every week, too, obviously.
Right.
But I've really enjoyed learning from some of the folks. Like, even our episode about colon cancer, I feel like that one... it was so much different than all of our other episodes because, man, I don't know if he's, like, busy or what, but my friend, Mike, he came on and he just got down to business.
Right.
It was 1 hour of, like, bam, 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 bam. Okay, we're done. Right. And then we were done. And it was such a different kind of feel and cadence to the rest of our right. episodes. It was probably a little bit much for most of our listeners. But he just shared so much good information
right,
in that
right.
1 hour. Like, he jam-packed it all in there, which I appreciate because he's a busy guy. He had to get to his appointments. Right. But yeah, I really enjoyed all of our guest episodes thus far. And hopefully we'll have more in season 2.
Right.
And beyond.
For sure.
Yeah. Love I'm trying it. To think if there were any other highlights. Oh, we can't forget some of the funny moments that happen. So, for example, like I mentioned recently, flicking the glasses straight off my face across the room, that will live on in my mind. But also the sleep episode with that amazing award-winning acting that we put on for you guys. So that was great fun. I'm kind of scrolling through just a teeny bit here to see if
remember we
if
had to do the you made me you neighed for the horse episode.
True, or one of them. True. Yep. Yeah, the first horse episode, I think, because we ended up
and
doing
I
two.
Had personal growth from
you
it.
Did
because
and
I
you introduced us for the sleep episode to some degree. I made because yeah. I was pretending to be asleep, and then you had to be the first to speak. So I was very proud of you there. Just so much good stuff on here. I'm scrolling back through
and then
see.
Our 50th episode, remember, we were dressed
oh,
up.
That was good times. I still love that you went full on old lady. Like, you went 80. I was like 50.
Right.
I was just like a 50-year-old white woman drinking wine with
right.
some baby powder in my hair, but no, you went all out. You had the granny wig and the granny glasses and everything, so... Honestly, I should have mandated that you wear that outfit again for this episode because you could have pulled off a 100-year-old lady with that outfit.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. But I have like orangutan at the zoo vibes with my baby bump. That's what I keep telling my doctors. I'm like, I'm at the orangutan at the zoo stage of pregnancy where you're just like hot and sweaty. Your boobs are huge, so they're like sagging over your belly. And again, you're just sweaty, and I don't know. It's the orangutan time. At the zoo phase.
I can see why. Yeah, it's well, true. I'm excited for you to enter this new chapter. I know, remember when you did the survey on Instagram and you asked people, should we get a second dog or have a baby? And you were saying it was very, very divisive. Like, everybody
right,
had an opinion.
Right. Right. It's kind of like one of those polls where you're just like, oh, this will be fun. I'll get like 3 people and they'll be my yeah. friends, you know? But it was like yeah. tons of people were like, definitely baby or like, definitely dog. And it was funny. Some people were like, both.
I was surprised. So I told you right about my grand experiment. Oh. By the way, the first video will be out by the time this posts, but I'm going to give you... Amy, in June, I'm going to give you a little sneak preview. Hold on. So the stool test data experiment that I'm doing. I told you about this, right?
Yeah, you're doing like multi of the ombre, right?
Yes. Yes, I'm doing 8 million stool tests with them. So I have the first part of the data back in. So I've got the baseline assessment, and then I've got the assessment from after I took glucomannan for 2 weeks. Now what I'm waiting for is the washout period, the new baseline.
Right.
Because really what you're looking for with these patterns is like, okay, if I started out, I'm just going to make up numbers. If something starts out at 10 and then it increases to 20... Does it then go back down to 10 when you discontinue that intervention? That's where we get real pattern recognition here and real data.
Right.
But I was very surprised, actually. The glucomannan didn't change stuff nearly as much as I thought it would.
Mm.
Now, keeping in mind, I will say, I had the best poops of my entire life when I was taking that stuff.
Dang.
It was wonderful. The fluffiest, smoothest poops you ever did see. Like, I wanted to take pictures of all of them for you, but I did not. So I felt symptomatically great. And as soon as this experiment's over at the end of the year, I'm going to go back on glucomannan because I loved it that much.
Right.
That now I'm like, oh man, I have to wait like 6 months before I'm allowed to take it again. Darn it.
Oh my God.
So I'm a little annoyed, but for the sake of science, I'm not going to go back on. But I have the first part. So I have the baseline and after 2 weeks of glucomannan. I don't have the second part where we go back to baseline yet. But as an example, Firmicutes and Bacteroidetes, basically the same. My proteobacteria, basically the same. Maybe went down ever so slightly. Bifido, basically the same. Acromantia, maybe went up a little bit in my case. It was, hold on, let me see if I could take this out though. Hold on. One thing that I'm debating is, Mike and I were talking a little bit about this, that it's common in science to throw out outlier data.
Right.
So if one sample looks completely, totally different than all the other ones, it's not uncommon for scientists to just say, oh, that was a dud or that was a fluke and throw it out.
Right.
So I will say on my baseline assessment, I had one test that looked notably different than all three of the other ones because I did 4 for the initial baseline. And I'm debating taking that out of the data interpretation because it's so different than the other three. But with the data as is, at the phylum level, not a ton changed. Lactobacilli, likewise, if anything, my lactobacilli went down a bit. But I will say, when I did the initial baseline collection, I wasn't thinking fully. And I had yogurt a couple days prior. So that might be part of that. I think that that's maybe a little bit hard to interpret. We'll have to see what my baseline looks like on the other side now.
Right.
Because I haven't had yogurt since then. A lot of the butyrate producers look fairly similar from one sample to the other. Disulfovibrio looked basically the same, maybe ever so slightly increased on my count. What's kind of funny, too, is like based off of what I'm seeing on here, if I saw this level of disulfovibrio in a patient, I would actually probably treat it. But on me, I'm totally asymptomatic. Like, I don't have the sulfury, horrible, toxic farts. I don't have any symptoms of hydrogen sulfide overgrowth. So I'm choosing to just leave it be, actually. And I'm not going to muck with it too much. But I think it's interesting because, like, with data, we're trying to make these assumptions about like what things mean, and everybody wants to know like, well, where should this number be and what is the normal range, what's the optimal range? And in truth, with stool testing, we really don't know. We can make educated guesses, but really we don't know. But yeah, just looking like minor shifts, but a lot of it could be statistical noise, so I'm not really that worried about it. Cephalobacterium went up slightly with the glucomannan, so that maybe is kind of neato. I think that those are, and then some of those specific butyrate producers might have gone down ever so slightly. I don't know, it's very fascinating because really the differences that I did observe with this part of this experiment were really pretty unremarkable. Like not huge shifts. Now, this could mean two things. Either I'm the best possible candidate to do this on because my microbiome looks iffy, shall we say, from many, many, many years of antibiotics. Like, I look like I could use some work on testing.
Right.
So that either makes me the best possible candidate because my microbiome looks like all of yours, or it makes me the worst possible candidate because I'm trying to, like, feed the bifido, but there's, like, no bifido there to feed.
Right.
You know? So,
right.
I'm not sure which of the two is the truth, but as I go through the experiment, hopefully I'll learn a little bit more. But I did a survey on Instagram and the people have spoken. I asked them which one to do next. Should I do 2FL or PHGG? And by a landslide, people wanted PHGG. So that is what I have started today.
Wow. We'll have to definitely keep an eye on this experiment and see sort of what knowledge we can glean.
I know. I'm excited. It might be a big nothing burger, but it might be interesting. At the bare minimum, I'm going to talk about it on YouTube quite a lot. But yeah, so I've already done glucomannan. I'm currently on PHGG. Next, I'll probably do 2FL because I'm just really curious what that one's going to look like. Because again, like with my bifido, where they're at, I'm really curious if I could raise them with 2FL.
Right.
The other ones that I want to do, and I haven't decided the order yet, are inulin, my beloved, my darling, XOS, and psyllium. And if I have enough kits to do it, I think I will. I'm going to do acacia as well. So.
Nice.
That'll carry me straight through until the new year with poop tests. So Dang. It's going to be 2022 is a weird year for me because okay. it's going to be a lot of poop tests in 2022. But like I said, my microbiome looks like all of yours. So if there's something that notably raises my bifido or my lactobacilli, if it could do it for me, it can sure as heck do it for you. Right. That's the way I figure it. So
cool.
Also, even though he has much better bifido than I do not think I could pay my husband enough to do the experiment on him. So really, I had no other choice. I had to do it on myself because I'm the only weirdo who's willing to do this experiment. But that'll be on the Triangle Holistic Gut Health channel. Like I said, by the time this episode airs, the glucomannan video will be out because I just collected the washout period kits this week. So in about 2-3 weeks I should have the results, so I'll probably will have already posted the first video of the series on my YouTube channel by the time this airs.
Nice. And you're getting a little glitchy. It's I'm still hearing you, but it's a little glitchier on my end. I don't know if that's okay. Our cue to wrap up.
CC might be like, enough, Mom.
And I probably need to pee.
She's in there saying, wrap it up. Get on with
right.
it.
Punching my ribs.
Yeah.
Kind of what she does. Jess, or really kicking
Jess
my
liked
ribs
to punch
at this
my
point.
Liver. Yeah. Jess was a liver puncher, for sure. Or like a karate kicker.
Oh, man.
Little bugger. Yeah. All right, guys. Well,
CC's like up on the right side, just kicking. That's all she does.
Calm down, CC. We're almost done.
Right. She hasn't been birthed.
Oh, my gosh. And I can't wait to see her in her little avocado onesie. No, we made it to the end of the episode, and it was a slightly longer one than average. I've got an hour 37, so we gave you all the time you needed, CC.
Yes.
I don't know what you're doing in there. Chilling out, chillaxing. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, guys, like I said, this is the end of season one of the IBS Freedom podcast. It has been an absolute pleasure. You know the drill. Leave us a 5-star review. Subscribe on the YouTube channel. Go check us out on the Instagram. We've got, I might actually be changing my handle soon because it occurred to me nobody knows the relevance of the Triangle Guts thing. I'm in the Triangle of North Carolina, for the record. But nobody outside of North Carolina knows what that means or cares, so I'm probably going to change my handle soon, actually. Right now it's Triangle Guts. But Amy's is Amy_Hollenkamp_RD, right?
Correct.
Cool. So you can find her, and we will be back for season two. But like I said, it'll be a little bit of a hiatus. We're going to give Amy some time to just recover and soak in the new baby smells and figure out the motherhood thing and maybe get some sleep again, because that's a little bit sparse in the beginning for a lot of parents. So keep your eyes peeled, stay subscribed, keep an eye on Instagram, and we will surely announce when we are posting the first episode of season two for you all on your favorite podcast, the IBS Freedom Podcast. Take care.